we go. The John Curley, Sherry Ellicker Show, and you along for the ride. Much appreciated. Sherry, you don't have time to dive into the news because we are joined by the 2011 Teacher of the Year when it came to science. Vanessa Ramsey joins us on the line because I saw this piece that Todd Myers has in the Washington or National Review. Washington State's new climate curriculum attacks rational thinking. I'm reading through the article, and I see this Todd's showing all the new sort of ways they're going to try to teach science. And then he goes all the way down here, and all of a sudden, hey, here's the Teacher of the Year. Vanessa, thanks for coming on. Todd talks about you in this article. I guess he called you and wanted to know your reaction. What were some of the things that sort of stuck out? This is approved by the state of Washington, and this is a curriculum that can be taught in schools, and this is about primarily the science of climate. Were there any things in particular that you came across when you saw what was coming down that was to be taught in class that shocked you the most?
Yeah, hi, thanks, John. There were several things that really stood out to me. One of the things I know Todd already mentioned was just absolutely condemning rational thinking. There's also a pretty blatant science anti-science attitude that came across in this curriculum. And I think the thing that bothered me the most was really a manipulative way of guiding students towards political activism, specifically within the realm of environmental justice is the term they use. And they really do that by implanting, you know, ideas into students' thought process through the use of these emotional narratives.
So I remember in science class, you have a hypothesis, the scientist has a hypothesis, and then you test it with an objective eye, and you keep running the numbers through to gather the data to prove or disprove your hypothesis, and then you say, oh, eureka, and then you jump out of the bathtub and you run naked through the streets, right? I used to remember that from sixth grade science.
Of course.
There was no emotion involved, but this, they say that it should be emotions first, because it's how you feel about something before, and then the data is either used to support your emotions. That's the complete opposite of the basic sort of tenets of how science is supposed to do what science does.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was pretty duplicitous in the way that, you know, instead of just giving students their primary data source in this curriculum was this Washington Tracking Network. And so instead of having students just look at the data with an open mind, they really pull on students' heartstrings with some social narratives that they have woven throughout the various modules, which is just, you know, leading students to these predetermined conclusions within these parameters of social or environmental justice. Like some of the key questions that they ask, you know, I think key questions are absolutely essential. It's a good teaching practice, having key questions or learning targets. But what they've done with their key questions, they're not guiding questions about science, about the data. They're around social issues, emotions, or taking social action. So some of the things they're asking students, you know, about are like, how do you feel about this narrative? Or name some of the emotions that you can imagine. Or what comes up for you as you think about X, Y, or Z? So it's very emotion-based.
Huh. Is there a place for emotion, Vanessa, in science? Should this be eliminated, or is it just displaced, that the science should come first and then your own personal feelings around it should come later? Or should we not even enter into that? We should just use the data and just use that as our conclusion.
Yeah, that's a great question, Sherry. Science needs to be an objective method about learning about our physical world. And I really think we need to remember that and just keep applying that objectivity and teaching that to our students. So I would say, like, during scientific research, we need to remain impartial. We need to set aside emotion and just examine the data. Then we can take, you know, the data and the conclusions and then go ahead and bring that into the realm of social issues. That's where we can apply, you know, the science and move forward. Because, of course, we want to learn about the world around us and learn how we can, you know, best improve our lives and, you know, our environment. But within scientific research, no. I think they've really, you know, mingled that together, and it needs to be kept separate.
Todd states in this, is one sentence from the Washington State new high school curriculum is,
For far too long, science and science education has prioritized my rational thinking.
Mm-hmm. I when I first saw that, I think my jaw, I had to pick my jaw up off the floor. If we don't have rational thinking in science, what are we left with?
Yeah.
I noticed something at the end of the curriculum. It was repeated several times in the final module. They repeated several times, science is not enough. Science is not enough. I'm thinking, well, what else do we need here? And they're implying we need to bring emotion into this.
And you know, it's the history repeating itself, right? First it's a tragedy, then it's absurd, right? Then it's a comedy. You go back to the medieval years, right? You take the scientists that would say something against the church, that we go around the sun. Oh, okay, we're going to put you in house arrest, Galileo. Or irrational numbers and square roots. We're going to tie a rock around your neck and throw you in the ocean so you drown because you're saying things that just go beyond what people feel about something. I mean, this is very, very similar to that thinking, that emotion, or you can use faith, right, or religion, it trumps the basic reality that 2 + 2 = 4. We all agree with that. And then once we get the data, then we can act upon the data. But why do you think they're doing this?
Oh, boy. That's really hard to say, John.
Would you say that's a – hold on. Hold on.
Yeah.
Vanessa, would you say it's a better question than what Sherry just asked?
Oh, okay.
Just for the
he's very competitive.
Just for the record.
Talk about emotion.
Go ahead, well, Vanessa. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. No, that's fine. It seems very plain, having gone through the entire curriculum. I spent months combing through it. But they are guiding students. I mean, that's the ultimate end in the final module. They want students to be these political activists within the realm of, they call it, this environmental justice or climate justice. Uh-huh. They have activities that they want students to do to get involved with certain social groups and certain activist groups. That seems to be the final goal of this whole curriculum.
And Vanessa...
Go ahead, Sherry.
Oh, I was just going to ask her, because I know, because you won Science Teacher of the Year in 2011.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How have things changed? What are your observations? I mean, not just this, but just in terms of teaching science, the interest in science, what kids are leaning toward. What are your observations about that?
I think what's changed, and that's kind of two different layers. I think what has changed, what I've observed just at the administrative level, is less focus on just going through the scientific inquiry process. What students, they're so eager to learn. They love science. Typically, I've gotten back into teaching again recently, and they are so excited to learn science. And so there's a lot more, definitely, since 2011 with coding and robotics and engineering. So I think giving students more opportunities to actually go through the scientific inquiry without bias, definitely giving them different opportunities to explore a variety of science concepts, and that's the way to go. And they want that. But it seems like there's less emphasis on that, at least what I've seen at the administrative level and in public education.
It seems to me from reading the article from the National Review that Todd Myers wrote that this is a curriculum that you can use. You don't have to.
Mm-hmm.
This is just one that the Washington State has come up with. And here you go. Here's a curriculum you can teach. So if you don't want to use it, you don't have to. So say, oh, I know, but we don't use that one.
Yeah.
So they can use other ones. It gives them, a fig leaf to cover on this. But still, it's the fact that the state, our money, pays these people to come up with this curriculum.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, that's why I've always felt, and I used to have Dury Monson say all the time, that the climate change for people has become a religion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And that's what it seems like.
Yeah, yeah, I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I believe, yes, the climate is changing, but there's... a lot of question about what's the cause of that. And I think we need to look at that objectively and without an implicit bias.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're teaching again. Where are you employed? Are you allowed to say?
I'm in the state of Montana now.
By choice, you left Washington not for any political reason, but just you're like big sky country?
Yes.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes to all that. Okay, for all that. All right, well,
do you find the political climate there different in the schools? Not quite as progressive, or what do you see when you're teaching there versus when you taught here?
That's a loaded term, progressive. I am enjoying teaching once again. I will say that much. And small school, and it's lovely.
All right, we'll leave it at that. All right, Vanessa Ramsey, Teacher of the Year 2011, now in Montana, enjoying everything that state has that this state doesn't at this point. All right, we'll leave it. All right, thanks, Vanessa. Appreciate your time.
Yes,
continue
you're
the good work. All right, there we go. All right, I was going to brag and do my body in motion tends to stay at motion. Body at rest, Sherry, tends to?
Stay at rest.
There we go. That's the law of Jacob. Jacob, that is the law of...
He's on the phone with Vanessa right now.
Oh, okay. All right. Andrew, he will pass to you. That's the law of... motion tends to stay at rest. Body rest tends to stay at rest.
Wait, I didn't understand that. Are we talking about Newton's laws of physics?
Inertia. Inertia was the answer we're looking for.
Oh, it's such a great question. I ask myself that every day.
You know what? Hold on a second. Jacob, let me ask you something.
I swear to you, I did not prepare the guest.
Oh, my God. When we get these guests on, if you say, when Sherry asks a question, if you could just say, that's a great question, that would be
really... That was unprompted. Yeah. Absolutely not prompted. I submitted my questions, and I don't think that was actually one of them. So, no, she had no prompting at all.
And I have done that before, to be clear. We have had a guest. I have had it. Yeah, I've told the guest to do that. That was not one of them. That was, yeah, sincere.
Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. So you have told guests ahead of time, prior to coming on the air, it would be great when Sherry asks a question. No, hold on, Sherry. You have done that before. You've set the guest up to kind of backhand me by saying, oh, that's a great question, Sherry.
No, I can tell you what he's done. When somebody has done that and said it's a great question and then you got upset about it, the next guest that comes on, if it was like in the next segment, he said, now say it's really great, just to rub it in.
I think it was Matt Markovich, too. It was actually a reporter, and then he did it like every question she asked and became really obvious really quickly. So... You know okay. when I'm prompting.
Yeah, play games. You're playing games. The two of you are playing games. All right. Well, you know what? The next person comes on and does that. It's going to be like, well, that doesn't count. We're just going to have to doubt it, right? Because the science, that's the data. How many guests come on, percentage of guests that come on, percentage of guests that are not prompted by Jacob to say, oh, that was a great question, Sherry. But she said the exact same thing. Oh, Sherry, that's a great question.
Is it possible that it's true?
How do you measure greatness compared to what I'm asking?
Well, she didn't say you had a great question, so I'd say you're measuring it up against... She just randomly said my question was great.
Oh, some Teacher of the Year.
Okay.
Wow, now all of a sudden...
yeah, I know. She was a great guest.
Questioning and now you're qualifications.
You're being difficult because she didn't say it to you.
All right. Well, the question afterwards was not as good, by the way.
Thank you. I'm glad you're keeping score. Thank you for measuring everything. It's much appreciated.
I can't help it. I keep emotion out of it. It's just data. Uh-huh. I'm data driven. I got a hypothesis.
To keep everybody happy, Jacob, from now on, please tell the guest to say John's first question is a great question, no matter what.
You want me to stack the deck in the opposite direction?
There you go. Put your thumb on that scale.
If you have to.
Do you know, I'm just going to say, whoever has the better question, just tell them at that. Well, no, maybe, I don't know. I just feel like there's
How about this? How about that's not a good question? Why doesn't anybody ever say that?
Yeah. Well, because I think they're polite, but you could put a compilation, a montage of all the times people have told me I had a great
question. That's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, is that what we're going to do now?
I just think the last question for every guest, it should be which one of you had the better question.
Yeah.
All right, that's how we're going to start.
Way to alienate people.
We get them on. We'll get them on. We'll set that up, and then we'll dig into what we're talking
they
about.
Have to, they have to end the interview by making an enemy of one of you.
Yeah, right. And making them feel incredibly awkward.
Tomorrow.
Book somebody, anybody for the next segment. I don't care who it is. Get somebody on. Thank you, Sherry. That was great. It was a good question. Bucky's?
Oh, it's such a great question. That's asked myself that every day.
Okay. Bucky's Auto Service Center, 16 locations, been around for 53 years. No question about it. Especially take your car. Take your car to Bucky's Auto Service Centers. Well, I guess this idea that, here's the headline of this one from the Free Press. At high school debates, debate is no longer allowed. I found this to be shocking. When you go to debate, high school debates, you can go on there and see who the judges are. What do they have? They have like their
paradigm,
their declaration of their paradigm, what they're looking for, right?
That's right, and what they stand for. I think we have some sound. Dana Perino was interviewing a young lady, and she describes what one of these judges had in her paradigm.
Okay, here we go. Ready?
In March at an NSDA tournament, before the round even started, we were debating President Biden's former foreign affairs track record, and my judge warned me not to bring up President Trump as she deemed it inappropriate. If a student like me who is going into debate to have free and open conversations is being censored in this way, that is no longer debate, and the NSDA must be recognized as an organization that is not allowing students like myself to express openly.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if she's also said about in the sound. Here she also asked about the response to some of the comments in the piece. Here we go. This is
just wanted to show the viewers at home. This is call for number one here. Lila Lavender, she posted this, that before anything else, including being a debate judge, I am a Marxist, Leninist, Maoist. I cannot check the revolutionary proletarian science at the door when I'm judging. I will no longer evaluate and thus never vote for rightist, capitalist, imperialist positions and arguments. That is shocking to me. So you know, going into the room, that what if you wanted to maybe make opposite point of view to her, that you know you're going to lose. So then is the idea that you just don't compete at all?
The idea is that you conform to what the judge's ideology is. Next month at the national tournament, the NSDA goal is to have a minimum of 2 to 3 LGBT judges in the final round. I couldn't care less about what my judge identifies as long as they are partial. That is what matters. Students should not conform in any way, shape, or form during a debate. Debate is shaped based off of evidence, not based off of the judge's ideology.
Not anymore. Then she goes on to explain why this is such a... I mean, you can obviously see why it's a big
I think
problem.
It is a small number of judges, but we have to keep in mind that it's the culture around NSDA debates. We're not allowed to question affirmative action. See, there's a question that was posed last year. How does race-based affirmative action benefit Black Americans? If you notice how the question is posed, you can't challenge the idea that affirmative action actually hurts people that look like me, that during my college application process, it might prove to be a detriment. And that's what's wrong with the NSDA. It's not allowing for two-sided debates where students are open to express their views.
So apparently, according to the rules, you're supposed to show your opponent your evidence prior to. It's like full disclosure or discovery when it comes to a court case. You can't withhold evidence. You have to show it to the opposing counsel. In the same way, the rule is, here's my evidence that I'm going to be using in my debate, which, you know, it's kind of interesting, right? Like, you're giving everybody, here's what I'm going to use. You see it, so I'm not going to surprise anybody with any of this stuff. So now you can actually start to challenge what I have based upon my evidence. You do some research ahead of time. One of the judges said that if it's a Black kid debating a white, the Black kids don't have to reveal their discovery of their evidence prior to the debate. I mean, it's just... You know, it's 1964, there was Alabama, they had the literacy test. It was one way of stopping Blacks from being able to vote. Okay, you can vote, sure, you have to pass this test to show that you're literate. Well, I mean, the test, I tried to take one about 10 years ago, I was just looking through this thing. I mean, you can't follow this stuff. And they ask you the question, but you can tell the way it's written, you're like, God, I don't know what the answer is on this. It was designed intentionally designed intentionally to discriminate against black Americans that wanted to vote. They rigged it in order to discriminate, to stop people from having the right. I mean, I don't know how this is any different. We're not allowed to argue how capitalism has raised more people out of abject poverty than any other economic system in the world. And if you go in with that, automatically you're disqualified because the judge rejects out of hand all of it because their bias is so present. It's, that is crazy. I hope these kids, you know, whether left or right, even the kids that want to present on some other side, if they've got some bias, that they just reject this, what is it, the NASD or something, and they form their own debate competitions.
Well, nobody's stopping them. I mean, the kids probably don't have as much power as someone who oversees these judges. There's a judge, debate judge, Subham Gupta. His or her paradigm reads, if you are discussing immigrants in a round and describe the person as illegal, I will immediately stop the round, give you the loss with low speaks, that's low speaker points, give you a stern lecture, and then talk to your coach. I will not have you making the debate space unsafe.
Right. What they should do, if you just continue with this irrational sort of carry this all the way to the absurd, you would have the judge that's biased. Let's take capitalism versus Marxism or communism. Then you wouldn't have anybody. There would be no debate. There's no reason to debate. So you'd have two kids up there, both agreeing with whatever it is, right? And no one's actually debating another point. Everybody would be safe because everybody's opinions would be accepted and everybody's emotions would be accepted. And there'd be no need for debate. That would just be, you know, just rah-rah cheer for something without having to show evidence to point and strengthen your position as opposed to somebody else. I guess that's what they ultimately want, really, is no debate.
Yeah, I kind of wonder what qualifies you to be a judge. Like, were you a debate champion at some point? Is that what gives you entry into this little team of judges? Or it doesn't say what it is that qualifies you. So I'm curious about that, how they go about doing that. And like the young lady said, now they're trying to get at least four transgendered people on the judging panel for the next year. So
yeah,
don't know what their background is.
Well, that was a great question you asked, Jared. I'm sorry I don't have the answer for that one.
But as long as it's great, it's fine.
That's exactly
right. As long
right.
as someone says it's okay. great, it's fine.
I'll give it to you. I'll give it
okay.
to you.
Okay, thank you.
All right, let's see. There he is. Man, you had a tough day yesterday. The traffic was crazy coming out of, Eastern Washington. Nutty, nutty. Boy, oh boy, we struck a nerve on some of these topics you've been talking about, Sherry. You realize that?
That's good.
That's buckle good. Your seatbelt, lady. Goodbye, you're always a goodbye, you spin the world around. Goodbye, sweet feedback, don't leave me on my own. Cause I need you to get my job done. Yeah, woo-ha, yee-haw, wah. I'm sorry. Talk about Seattle firefighters. Talk about the fact they've changed how they're receiving and how they're letting who they're letting in, depending on the exam that they're giving. So Trevor 206 says, used to be 100 pounds up 10 flights of stairs. But according to Trevor, women couldn't do it. Firefighter exam in Washington is much easier than it was back in 1990. Luckily, the temperature of fires have changed as well, so it's gotten easier.
Richard in Covington said, in my 35 years of working, I have never left a job interview without the job.
Well, look at you, Richard. Mm-hmm. DVP in Tacoma. If they want true diversity in the fire department, where are the people that represent me? The overweight, the weak. Sciatica stricken firefighters. Believe me, if I'm in a burning building, I don't want someone that looks like me coming to the rescue. All right. Keep that in mind, DVP.
V in Auburn said, hello, Sherry. Need not worry too much about lowering the requirements of fire safety. Believe it or not, fighting fires accounts for about 10% of their calls. Typically, they are called out to medical emergencies, car accidents, and getting little kitties out of trees. The actual training for fire emergencies are more of a hands-on approach. Simulated fires, taking a car and setting it on fire, gives them the hands-on knowledge they need in order to understand the effects of what a fire can do.
Hmm, that's somewhat comforting. L.A. Dodgers, Matt in Lake Bay says, the Dodgers are appropriately named relative to dodging around this Catholic sisters issue.
And this is about Las Vegas. 360 says, yeah. My son went to Las Vegas back in April, and it is outrageously priced, just crazy, and that's even without gambling.
Yeah, we had our science teacher on, a science teacher of the year, talking about the new curriculums come down from Washington State. They want to teach in the schools. And Jeff in Port Angeles says, great guest, you guys. A teacher that embraces common sense education. We need more like her. Thank you.
Fake assistant, the last thing I want to be is me, white male, over 50.
Oh, boy. I hear you. I see that guy at the meetings all the time. And Geraldo in 206 says, John, I hire a woman to sell cars with defects. I hire women to sell cars with defects.
Okay. I couldn't figure that one out either.
Defects? Like manufacturer defects?
Defects like maybe the car's got a dent or it's not running correctly. But he's hiring women to sell cars with defects. Oh, very cryptic. Thank you. Good to know. If I see a woman selling me a car, I'll know there's some defects in it. Rye had a party here yesterday, and Nick went out and bought a whole bunch of floaties that the boys could float around on in the lake, and bought them M&Ms and Twizzlers. I'm like, Nick, they're not 8 years old. They're not going to do that. And then I spent the entire party trying to get these kids, hey, guys, go down to the lake and get in the floaties and float around. They're like, yeah, whatever.
Was it beer-flavored M&Ms?
Are you guys enjoying the M&Ms? No, I was trying to push all that stuff on him. And then at one point, Nick goes, just leave him alone. Just stop hanging around. You're like the weird dad. Hey, guys, let's get out of there and play some touch football. Come on, let's go. Huh? And it's like,
what's up with your dad?
Dad's a loser. Dad keeps wanting us to all get on the floaties or something, man.
Yeah. What's his deal?
I heard him talking about friends? Me. I went upstairs. I tried not to listen. I could hear them like, what's with your dad? Like, what? And I felt like going downstairs. Whoa, what's wrong with me? Come on, guys. I got some feedback. All right, you always feedback us. 1-888-973-5476. It's the roofing text line. Still much more of the John Curley Sherry Elliker show to go. Many, many, many topics. A great combination of news and entertainment. Newstainment, we call it. Touching on the news, touching on the taint. That's the way we do it.
Taint.
Excuse me?